We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast that dives into social relationships and why the investment you put into them is so important. Your host, Lori Hybu, will connect with industry-leading professionals and dive into their networking experiences and expert advice.
Hey, everybody. Lori Hybu here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybu and on Facebook. This week's guest is Mark Shannon. Mark is the owner of Supporting Strategies Milwaukee. His franchise provides bookkeeping and controller-level services to small and middle-market businesses as well as nonprofits. He is a former CFO for a division of GE, and he held senior finance roles at JP Morgan. Mark has experience with mergers, divestitures, international financial management, pricing, comp planning, strategic planning, new product development, cash treasury management, and dealing with large matrixed organizations. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
I understand you've got a big event coming up. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the Business Fundamentals Bootcamp and why you're doing it?
Yeah, sure. So we, every year in every market that Supporting Strategies works in, we try to have an event where we try to give back to the local business community, both to our clients as well as to some of the strategic partners that we have. The idea is for it to be sort of an educational event, almost like a mini MBA session, mm-hmm. for people to kind of brush up on things like, you know, legal issues that have kind of come to the forefront, HR issues, finance, accounting, you know, anything from management and leadership style and coaching development, that kind of thing. And the idea is for it to be sort of a good networking organizational sort of thing for you to do, but it's not targeted for the salesperson. It's more for that person who's sort of the business owner or the, you know, executive officer type level individual to come to and get some education in addition to kind of maybe getting some best practices from some of the industry experts that are out there.
Nice. And when is this happening?
It's June 14th, okay. And we're doing it at WCTC.
Okay. And I imagine there's information online we can share about it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll include those links then in the show notes here.
Okay.
Great. So what exactly is the difference between a controller, a comptroller, and a CFO?
I this is one of those questions that I feel like people don't always fully understand. So if I'm in a networking meeting, I always say we do controller level services, and a lot of people's eyes glaze over. They have no idea what that is.
Sure, right?
If I say I'm a bookkeeper, that's probably a little less than what we actually do. Mm-hmm. Your controller is sort of like your chief accountant. So they'll help you with making sure that you're recognizing revenue the right way. So if you're in certain industries, there are ways that you should be accruing for revenue and not doing everything on a cash basis when you get to a certain size.
Yep.
The controller will oversee that. They'll help make sure you've got what they call good controls, right? Which is segregation of duties, and people that are, you know, cutting the check are not the same people who are checking to make sure that the check that was cut is the right amount, right?
Sure.
You want to make sure you've got that sort of separation and segregation of activities. And the reason why is because you want to try to avoid fraud and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A comptroller is a little bit of a souped up controller. They usually work in like a municipality or a government type office. They're almost like a quasi CFO for more of a public entity. So you'd have like a comptroller for the city of Milwaukee or something like that. And then a CFO is generally going to be a little more strategic. Usually a controller reports to a CFO. The CFO is responsible for not just making sure the accounting's done right, but that they're giving good financial leadership and strategic and risk management leadership to the rest of the organization. So, yeah, when you think about, you know, how does my business currently fit with like a fractional CFO or something like that, we're effectively sort of like their left hand, right? And we help them manage a lot of the day-to-day grunt work, mm-hmm. that maybe the CFO shouldn't be doing.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, the CFO is going to be handling more of the higher level conversations that need to happen, and we arm them with the information they need to have that happen.
Yeah, nice. Really good explanation of the different roles. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So as a small business myself, I'm very, really interested in how you're going to answer this question. But what are some of the key things to look for from an accounting resource in your business?
So there's a couple things. I think, one of the things that I've been running into a lot is people try to do everything. And you're not necessarily going to get the best level of service. If you're going to somebody who does taxes, they're also doing all of your accounting and bookkeeping, and they're also doing all of your financial metrics reporting and business advisory. I feel like if you go to the bigger firms out there, they've separated those, and they've separated them for a reason. You want to make sure that whoever's doing your books is cognizant of, you know, sort of the cost value of what it takes to do something. So if they're asking you to track every little $2 receipt, is that really worthwhile, or is that a waste of your time? Mm-hmm. And the IRS isn't going to come and take you out behind the woodshed because you didn't account for every cup of Starbucks coffee.
Sure. Right?
Where they're going to get you is when you don't do stuff the right way. And you want to make sure that you've got that, like I mentioned before, the segregation of duties mm-hmm. also. So you've got a doer and a checker in everything that you're doing. People make mistakes. They may be honest. They may not be honest. But for whatever reason, you want to make sure that you've got two sets of eyes on stuff because the opportunity for fraud goes down a lot. The other thing that I'm a big proponent of is embracing technology. And if your accountant's not making your job easier or your life easier, then you probably need to be asking some pretty pointed questions about, well, I hear about, you know, optical character recognition or AI or all these other things that are out there, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're not quite fully to fruition, right? But
sure.
there is the capability for you to do a lot more with a lot less and to distribute the workload, especially for the business owner today. You're not an accountant and you shouldn't have to be. You know, there's no reason for you to have to do all your QuickBooks stuff yourself or for you to have to do all your stuff in Xero yourself. There are other people out there who can help you with that kind of stuff. And, you know, whether it's me, whether it's, you know, one of the other people that are in this community, right? There's a network of people that I've bumped into that are very proficient and very capable of doing a lot of this type of work mm-hmm. for you. And then that means that you can help sort of oversee it and you're another set of eyes. So now you've got three sets of eyes on what's going on and the business owner can ask the right questions as opposed to being so knee deep in the detail and wrestling with making the system do what they need it to do.
That yeah.
They're not getting it done right.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Took me a little while to learn that lesson that I should just focus my time on the things that I do really well instead of trying to teach myself QuickBooks and some of the other tools that I don't really have a lot of, I didn't have a lot of expertise in. I mean,
there's a lot of ways to squeeze a lemon, right? And the question is the best use of that time?
Absolutely.
Of, you know, trying to get your profitability higher, is it really cutting as much cost out as you can, or should I be out doing stuff to grow my business instead of just minimizing my cost?
Yep. I remember when I first started my business, I would, about an entire weekend once a month, would be dedicated to figuring out QuickBooks because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And it was a lot of time. And then I eventually am like, why am I spending this much time doing something I don't know? Where it took me probably about a year and a half. And then I finally found someone to come in once a month, twice a month, and then eventually got to a point where it's once a week. I had someone coming in to manage my books.
Yeah, yeah.
That changed things significantly. Yeah. So I highly recommend outsourcing your books if that's not your area of expertise.
I mean, it's the same of anything, right? If you're talking about marketing or if you're talking about, you know, other things, like I'm not a marketer, right, mm-hmm. at all. I know enough about it to be dangerous and to ask the right questions. And accounting should kind of be the same way, right? As a business owner, you can't completely absolve yourself of all responsibility for what happens financially in your business.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a part of you that should say, you know what, I don't need to do all the nitty gritty work. You know, I should just be the supervisor of
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. Big picture.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So let's shift to the topic of networking, because that's really the focus of the show here today. Yeah. My goal is to help alleviate any fear that comes with that word networking.
Yep.
So can you do that by sharing your most successful or favorite networking experience that you've had?
So I'm a member of a BNI chapter, and I took a look at a couple of different, you know, networking groups. One of the big things in my franchise that they preach from the get-go is we're big on what we call evangelist development or center of influence development.
Mm-hmm.
And they recommend that you immediately think about joining local BNIs and reviewing local BNIs or LATIP or whatever other organizations that are out there. In Wisconsin, I kind of feel like BNI is a pretty good organization.
Sure. Yep.
And for me, like three out of my first five clients came from being part of that networking organization and getting to know people who either through, you know, they themselves used my services or they referred somebody to me who used my services. You know, it just kind of points to that's a much easier sale when you're dealing with more of a referral type conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, your hit rate versus a cold call is, you know, 60% versus 2%.
Absolutely.
Where do you want to spend your time?
I'd rather love
spend
referrals.
My time talking to people. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. So that's great that you joined BNI and your first couple
and a bunch of other organizations too, but yeah,
came right from that. And I'm a huge advocate of that. Obviously, that's why I have a whole podcast on this topic. It's extremely important to build those relationships, and I can definitely vouch for the referrals convert a hell of a lot faster than those cold calls do.
It's harder to build trust with somebody who doesn't even have that sort of initial introduction, I feel.
Correct.
Like, right? The benefit of the referral is also having that.
Yeah. Well, and the integrity of the source of the referral, you know, that source plays a huge factor in, you know, someone is vouching for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So you mentioned you're in a number of groups and you've obviously had a number of different hats professionally. How do you stay in front of or nurture your network?
So one of the things is the event that I just talked about at the start of the show, which is the Business Fundamentals Bootcamp. Another thing that I try to make sure of is I tend to make at least a cursory appearance to every single networking group that I'm in at least once or twice a month. One of the interesting things I heard from another guy that I network with from time to time is, you know, the benefit of those networking meetings isn't necessarily to meet somebody new. It's to take a conversation maybe you had with somebody that you kind of knew or you'd had coffee with once or twice and take that a little bit deeper and develop that relationship further.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's one of the big benefits of going to some of these networking events. It isn't so much that I'm going to get like 15 business cards and new people that I'm suddenly going to call and they're going to turn into clients tomorrow. It's, you know, we get to know other people in our network better. And then as a result, I know better when to refer them in. So I look like a hero with my customers and clients,
right? Absolutely.
And then vice versa. They know when, you have a problem with this. Here's Mark's card, right?
Great. So what advice would you offer that business professional is really looking to grow their network?
I would encourage you to take a look at Eventbrite and take a look at things like BNI or, you know, any of the chambers of commerce. There's a couple of them in the local community that are pretty substantial and very good, and they all have very good networking programs.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them also provide some form of networking training along with that, which is also very cool. I know for a fact, like the Brookfield Chamber of Commerce does some, you know, member success orientation. That's a critical part of everything BNI does. You know, it's sort of how they, you know, measure success is have you been through the training programs and that kind of stuff. So you know how to give a referral in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you give leads, not referrals, right? There's a very big difference.
Oh, absolutely.
And one way to short circuit that sort of building a network is to start giving people leads and not true, you know, true referrals.
Yep. So. Yeah, absolutely. Really good advice. Just getting involved and attending the organizations. I think finding.
Sometimes you just got to show up. Right.
Showing up is important, and I'd say finding ones that you feel comfortable and connected with, too.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So you spoke a lot about the events, and you're hosting an event, you're attending various events, but obviously today's day and age, digital networking can be really powerful, too.
Yeah.
I guess two-part question. One, are you doing anything from the digital perspective? And two, between digital and traditional, which one do you ultimately find more value in?
So I do both.
Okay.
I think digital is more to keep me top of mind as opposed to developing like a, you know, huge section of potential clients or partners. I have found some good partnerships through, you know, second tier connections through LinkedIn, right?
Yep.
And then I kind of reach out to them and I say, hey, I'd be interested in getting to know a little bit more about what you do because it sounds like we'd be good partners. And that's pretty common. I feel like that the problem with social networking on, when you get into digital is I feel like there's a lot of people trying to mine that from just a sales perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a lot of these sort of random requests from people in San Antonio or Miami or overseas. And you're like, I don't know you and I don't know that I care to know you. Not that I don't want to, but there's, you know, the first thing that I get is a whole thing on blockchain and Bitcoin and how you can invest in it and that kind of thing. I have no interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And I don't want you to sit there and try and pitch me on why I should be using you for my social media management. Cause I have people locally that I would much rather employ doing that. And you know, maybe I'm a little colloquial, but I like to go with the local face.
Absolutely.
And that way, if they screw up, I've got them locally to help, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of digital, obviously, but mm-hmm. appreciate the energy that is that comes from the traditional events and even just the one-on-one meetings.
Yeah.
You like you said, you kind of have that deeper conversation that gets to happen, and then you can provide real value to that person.
Yeah.
And offer those strong referrals.
I feel like the millennials tend to embrace digital marketing a little bit more mm-hmm. than the baby boomers and even Gen X to a certain degree.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm an X, so like I'm sort of in that strange middle ground where uh-huh. I know what life was like before AOL and I know what it's like now after it.
Yep, exactly.
So I almost need to set a new timeline.
If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Don't worry so much about the hours. Worry about your on-the-job education.
Interesting.
When I first started my career, I probably put in north of 60-hour weeks, probably closer to 80 most of the time when I was at Bank One because we were in the midst of a turnaround situation. And Jamie Dimon had just started there like 3 months prior, so we were in the middle of writing off $6 billion. And how you explain that to your rating agencies and the board of directors and everybody else was a big part of my first 6 months on the job, along with like building out what their plan was going to be, like how they did a budget. They didn't even have a budget process. So a lot of that kind of stuff was sort of my first 6 months on the job, which is shocking for a bank that size at the time. But yeah, I think, you know, I learned so much in that short period mm-hmm. of time that, you know, it was basically like an MBA education within, you know, 18 months or whatever of my career at the very beginning. And that was awesome. Like if you think about, you know, how hard it is to get into that sort of position of trust where you're almost like the right hand of the CFO mm-hmm. who's reporting into the CEO and you're the dweeb in the corner taking notes. That was great experience mm-hmm. And great exposure. And I probably took a little bit of that for granted and bitched a lot about how much I got paid and how many hours I was working.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the long run, it ended up paying off for me. So.
Well, yeah, it brought you to where you are today, which is great.
Yeah.
We've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person that you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
This was the one question that I thought I had a hard time with because I wasn't really sure how to answer it.
Okay.
Most of the people that that I want to meet are generally going to be local these days. I'm not really looking to meet big luminary type people.
I think
one thing that would be helpful for me in my business is getting to know franchisors and talking to them a little bit about what they're doing for their franchisees when it comes to accounting and bookkeeping and that kind of stuff. Because I feel like a lot of them have proprietary systems on the front end with their transaction systems and that kind of stuff, but they don't really have good process controls on the back end. And then they kind of put it on the franchisee to sort of figure it out with local options. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not, right? It depends on who they get. So,
is there anything locally, like a networking group for franchise owners in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I'm actually in one of them.
Okay. I was just curious because I'm not really in that space, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One of the coaches I know from Franchoice, she runs a First Friday group every Friday.
Okay, so nice.
I need to introduce you to her.
Awesome. Happy to meet new people.
Yeah.
So as a business owner, a lifelong learner, I'm always curious what my guests are reading or getting their insights and, you know, new information from. So what book or podcast are you reading right now?
I'm reading The Trusted Advisor.
Okay.
By Richard Wagner. It's about I'm obviously in a role where people want me to be sort of an advisory capacity, right? That's sort of my role. I think for me, it's important not to be viewed as just a salesman trying to shill, you know, my services and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of times where I'll tell people stuff that I can offer isn't worth it, you know, that kind of thing. And hopefully they find that valuable. But that's actually a really good book in terms of how you should interact with a client in a way that makes them trust you and you become almost like friends in some ways, right?
Yeah.
It's a much better way to do business, I feel like, than making it very transactional.
Yeah. Sounds like a really good read, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we want to have positive relationships with everyone we work with, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this one at you as a surprise. Here's your chance to interview me.
Okay.
What is something that you would like to ask me?
So I've been very curious about some of the things that you do in your side of the business with the automated chatbots and some of that type of stuff. How did you come to get into that space, and what sort of drove you to, you know, think you wanted to go that route?
As far as the technology?
Yeah, the technology side of stuff. And how are you kind of approaching that right now? Like, how do you look at it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to keep my finger on the pulse as much as I can. There's so many new things that are happening constantly that it's easy to get overwhelmed. I was asked to speak on chat. And so I ended up doing a lot of research around that topic. And we have chat on our site right now as well. And that's integrated with the CRM system that we use. So we are HubSpot partners.
Okay.
And that actually the chat feature comes free with the free CRM in HubSpot, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we use it too.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, it's fascinating to me that you mentioned, you know, how millennials prefer digital. Well, that is their primary preferred way to communicate is chat. You know, whether it's texting or just doing a quick chat on a website. And my research showcased that only 9% of businesses actually have chat on their website right now. So it's a huge missed opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, chat... you get a response within 2 to 3 minutes, where an email, it could be 5 business days, you know, and a phone call, goodness, who knows how long it takes to get a phone call back nowadays.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't, everyone wants the instant gratification. Why would you not put chat on your website right now?
Yeah. And is there automation that's behind that today?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can build out rules.
Okay.
Basically, you can... depending on how the conversation flows.
Yeah.
And you can get really sophisticated where it looks like it's not automated, or it can be very transparent that, hey, I'm Robo Kathy and I'm here to, you know, hit one if you want to schedule an appointment.
Okay.
So no different than what we're used to on phones, right?
Yeah.
To dial 2 to talk to sales, 3 for support. So it's the same thing that you do in chat.
Okay. Very cool.
Good questions.
Yeah.
Thanks. So, Mark, do you have any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Yeah, it's not about net taking. That's one of the things that, like, I always try to caution people about. And if you're in a networking situation and the first thing you do is hand somebody your card, you're probably doing it wrong. The only time you should really be handing out your card is if it makes sense for you to get to know that person better.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in meetings before where, you know, younger people in the group are walking around to literally every single table and just like shuffling out cards like they're a dealer at a blackjack table. That's not the right way to do it.
Yes.
And it's probably self-evident. I mean, most people probably know that. But yeah, it is really much, you know, the best part of networking is really about how can you help the other person, not about how you can be helped. And, you know, if you don't feel good after you help somebody else out, then maybe you're in the wrong line of business.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's so much truth to that. And the sooner that any individual figures that out, the better and faster they're going to have successes within their business at the end of the day. Great. So if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
So they can call me off the Supporting Strategies website, or they can contact me at my email, which is mschanen@supportingstrategies.com.
All right. And we will include all that information in the show notes, along with the link to the Business Fundamentals Bootcamp.
Very cool. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a great conversation. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Mark for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to see who will be on the show next. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next episode.